Each of the planets operate differently in each of the signs. We're all the signs. So this is one of the other big problems with Western astrology and how it's practiced. People get really attached to their sun sign or whatever they associate with. They don't necessarily understand that actually we're a mandala. All of the signs are in you. Some of them have more planets than others, so you obviously have more of that energy, but the signs are really more of the feeling and the environment that we're in. The houses, what they rule, and where they're activating in your chart and what's going on in the sky right now and how that relates to you is going to show so much more than just knowing your sign and attaching to that.
This is the Sovereign States of Mind podcast, and today we're talking about Vedic astrology. This might be a topic you've heard about. You may have heard of astrology before, but you've never heard of Vedic astrology. What Vedic astrology is it actually covers the stars as they are. For example, when each zodiac actually starts, whether that's from Aries to Taurus to Gemini. In Western astrology, we link it to a date in the calendar. In Vedic astrology, you actually link it to the exact degree where it is in the sky.
Well, there's a 24 degree difference between the way that the tropical calculates and the way the sidereal calculates. So it's been 2,000 years since the sky has looked the way that it did when Westerners established their system.
Okay, it's been 2,000 years since the Western astrology system was like accurate. Created since it's been accurate. And so the Vedic astrology system stays in tune with the stars, not a calendar.
Exactly. So because it's based on the stars, wherever the stars are is how it's calculated. The stars are fixed, right? Just like the sun, but wherever the planets are in relationship to the stars from us here on Earth, because we're the ones interpreting this, it's our experience, that stays the same based on... Right. Yeah, and so it accounts for the progression of the equinox, whereas the Western system doesn't, because it's fixed to this idea that Aries begins
on the 21st or whatever.
Right.
This is a really powerful conversation. I've always found astrology to be a really fascinating way to approach life and just cosmological cycles going on way out there that ancient cultures found really important and they created whole mythologies on. Yet here we are, and we rarely take a second look up at the skies, up at the heavens, when our ancestors saw God, the gods up there. So when we look at cosmological cycles, we can choose to work with them, we can choose to ignore them, we can choose to base our whole lives on them. We talk about all these in this episode. I'm really excited for you to listen to it. If you like it, please leave a comment or a review on Spotify. There's a poll on Apple Podcasts. You can leave a review. Really appreciate your support.
True freedom comes from within.
Sovereign States of Mind is a project to create a bit of a catalog or database of these really important topics that we all could be exploring at one moment or another in our life. So check out sovereignstatesofmind.com to get more details on today's episode. Sign up to the newsletter to get bi-weekly updates, both from the podcast and from my journey towards sovereignty. And we are looking to build a community around this. So if that's something interested to you, signing up to the newsletter is a great way to keep updated.
Okay, let's go.
Sovereign States of Mind.
Let's imagine someone listening to this is maybe very skeptical of astrology or have never looked into it. They might know their sun sign. My journey was first the sun sign, and it started like I had my first like real relationship. She was a Virgo, I was a Pisces, and we made mud, as she liked to say. She was very earthy,
and I'm definitely a water sign.
She always put it in terms of like, oh, you're a fire sign, so this, oh, you're an earth sign. And then I started to just kind of perceive that framework and look at my siblings, my family, my friends, like, oh, they are an earth sign. I really liked that analogy. I was like, yeah, we do make mud. Like, you know, because like, is it good? Is it bad? Is it inconvenient? Is it nice? I was like thinking of the qualities of mud. Anyway, that was my first like my
mushy
first thought. That's what got me into it. And then it became the rising sign and the moon sign. And then you have that trifecta. And I think most people that have taken a step into wanting to understand a little more, that's where we stay. The rising sign, the moon sign, the sun sign.
Right.
And the analogy I heard once was like, your sun sign is like, imagine you're a car. Your sun sign is like the make of it. Are you a Ferrari or are you a van? Right? or are you like a Honda, whatever. Then your moon sign is kind of like your engine inside. you know, the like it's a custom engine, or like what is the, how does it drive, right? Okay. Only you know that when you're driving it. And then your rising sign is like your paint job. It's like what people see of the car. So they're not necessarily knowing how it's driving on the inside.
Right.
Or like they're not really necessarily feeling the horsepower of the make, but they're seeing it. Mm. And it's how you come off to the world.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good explanation.
I'm pretty sure that's how they know.
Knowing very little sense. About cars, I like that.
I know nothing about cars, and it makes sense to
me. It works for me. So when you're looking at somebody's chart, you're looking at their rising sign as their primary identity factor of their body, their personality, what they do, their karma,
that's
their actions.
That's in Vedic astrology?
You're looking at their rising sign. Mm. So looking at the sun sign for all things, love, compatibility, career, your personality, everything, is putting a lot on something that's really actually more related to your connection to source.
Do you know the history of why we do that? Not even Western astrology, but Western culture places so much emphasis on the sun signs. It's because back in the day, probably close to almost 100 years ago, it was much easier to put a daily thing in the newspaper about your horoscope and make a business of your own personal astrology. So some guy started doing that just based on your sun sign. Here's what's going to happen. And that's how horoscopes started, which I think we can agree the way that the mainstream consumes them is pretty silly.
It's pretty silly.
It doesn't mean
it's entertainment.
It's entertainment.
Well, and anything could be accurate. You could read any of them and find yourself in them, because we're dying to know ourselves. We're really dying to know ourselves, right? And so we look into all these things and we find truth in them. But what blows people away when I do a reading for them, when they do have some background with Western, is how freaking precise it is. It's not this, it's not so nebulous and like, you know, there's a quality of generalization that occurs where it's just like, oh, this is what a Pisces is. A Pisces is dreamy. A Pisces is floaty. A Pisces is interested in, you know, things like astrology. But when you look at someone's chart, you can see more precisely why they are the way they are and why they do what they do and what their actions are. And if they're checking out, it's not some feeling of a sign. It has to do with the 12th house, and the different houses are based on your rising sign. So your rising sign, more than anything, is going to show what you do in the world and what happens to you. And a lot of people, like my interpretation of what you were saying before, like how it's easier to just do the sun sign. Well, yeah, because to know your rising sign, you need to know your time of birth. And a lot of people don't know that. So the moon sign becomes the next place of intimacy. If you think about the specificity, everyone born in a, you know, 30-day period might have the same sun sign. So that's going to be a broad relationship to you. Whereas everyone born with your moon sign, it's more based on the day you're born, and your rising sign on the hour you're born. So it's closer and closer to you the more you get to that specificity.
And this is universal. This isn't just Vedic astrology.
That would be true in Western astrology as well. Right. I just don't see that emphasis put on the rising signs with Western astrology, because they don't have the same way of organizing the houses. So a lot of the timing things and qualities we can see where what's going to happen to you, you're not as able to do them in the Western system, I would say. You're not as able to make those same kind of accurate predictions. It's more intuitive. And of course, there's something in it for, and, you know, there's something in all of this for everyone. But with Vedic astrology, it's so specific and so precise that you can make really educated choices in your life. The whole point is not to just identify yourself, pigeonhole yourself, and say, this is who I am. It's like, these are the different aspects of myself. This is the period I'm in. We have dasha cycles, which show which big period of time, what karma is raising for you in that time, what area of your life is up. What challenges are you facing? What blessings are you embracing? You know, and with that information, you can make sovereign choices. It's not all fated. We're not like stuck in this shell of this is what I am and I'll never be anything more. You know, it's like these are your choices and you can make them, and you can make a different choice if you embrace not just the system of knowing yourself, but other systems as well. So ultimately, the Vedic sciences are meant to work together.
Just a quick message to let you know that this show is brought to you by Kapi Hawaii. These are Kapi Vine microdosing lozenges. lozenges. If you're familiar with the brew from the Amazon, kapi vine is one of the fundamental components. It is completely non-psychoactive. It creates a lot of space around that moment where we can choose to respond or to react or to really claim sovereignty over our consciousness. Kapihawaii.com. Use promo code Jordan for 15% off your first package of microdosing lozenges and build your relationship with this plant ally, the kapi vine. It's really powerful. It's really amazing. Completely non-psychoactive. You stay totally functional. I normally give some to my guests, the interviews I do in person, and they always enjoy them quite a bit. If you're interested in getting started with a plant ally that's not going to take you too far away from your base consciousness so you can get stuff done, the kapi vine microdosing lozenges, kapihawaii.com. Use promo code Jordan. Get started today.
I often say like the rising sign is what people see of you and that don't know you. And it's also your actions, which speak louder than words, right? You might have all the best intentions in the world, but what you do is a big part of your personality.
It's the imprint you leave on the shared world. Reality we have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the moon sign is your inner self. It's the you that you know and that your partners know and that maybe your family and close friends know, that your why. You're the protagonist in your own little play, and the moon is that part of you. And the sun is the part of you that is wanting to connect to something higher. And those of us who have sun signs that do connect to something higher are receiving that download. It's like the president or the king of your little person that you are. You know, each of us have our own kingdom within ourselves. And the sun is kind of that leader of it all. So if you're not connected to source and you're connected to something much more detail-oriented or of this world, very material, like so especially if you see the sun in earth signs, you can see that people struggle to have that flow from universal consciousness. They're connected more to their material needs.
So let's unpack that for a second. Let's put this into layman's terms. Earth signs are Taurus, Virgo,
and Capricorn.
Okay. Water signs, Pisces, Cancer, Scorpio. Mm-hmm. Fire signs, Aries, Leo, Sagittarius.
Yes.
Are there any more? Air. Gemini, Aquarius, and
Libra.
And Libras. I'm just kidding. I follow a lot of Instagram astrology meme accounts.
Okay.
And it's really fun because you could say that for any sign. Yes. Oh, Gemini. Oh,
right. Everyone like, has
someone out there is going to get it.
Everyone's got their thing. For me, it's the rising sign, though. I'll always associate it with the rising sign.
Interesting.
Like Libras, vacillating, never make a decision.
So you were saying earth signs, there might be sometimes a challenge. You said connecting with source.
With source.
So what does source mean?
Well, it means whatever it means to you. It is the sun, yes. And in the Vedic understanding, the sun is consciousness. The sun is related
God.
To... It's God.
Masculine God? Or
masculine just, God, for sure masculine. Okay. It's definitely... It's the aspect of us that is our leadership, that is our authority, that is our power, it is the father... It's the king. It has very much masculine. It's the sovereign person. And I was going to say, you said you have Virgo rising. Maybe you have a Leo rising because it goes back 24 degrees.
Well, I get this. When I was first learning about this, I was all into it. This was about 10 years ago now. I calculated it wrong. My mom gave me the wrong birth. I was 3 hours earlier.
Oh, wow.
She gave me the wrong time. And then we finally dug it out. And I was like, Mom. And so for months, I was like, wow, I must have so much trauma and insecurity because I just don't feel like a Leo rising. I hate attention.
Oh, okay.
You know, I hate putting myself out there. All the things about Leo just didn't make sense to me. But I worked to embody them. And it helped that it was Leo season. So it was in the air. You know, I feel like whichever season we're in, season meaning the zodiac month. So,
right.
Like... I always feel it in the air, and I recognize that I embody those qualities. And I see it professionally, I see it personally, I see it physically. So at the time, I was like really working hard to like get more confident on camera. I'm like, I'm a Leo rising. I have to get deeper into who I am and reveal it. And then I found out I'm really a Virgo rising, and that's more shy.
Oh, okay.
It's more...
Can I offer something?
Sure.
Yeah. So I think one of the problems with the way that people look at astrology and Western astrology and all these things is they get attached to what the sign means and make that their whole being, as opposed to understanding things like there could be planets in your first house, there's where your ruling planet goes, like where the ruler of your first house goes. So I'm a Taurus rising. My ruling planet's Venus. Where Venus goes in my chart, that says more about me than almost anything else because it shows what I'm always doing. So you could be a Virgo rising, you could be a Leo rising, you could be a lot of different things. You could be a Cancer rising. But when you get it, when you get to see what you're doing and what you're making, then it all starts to make more sense. Or like a Leo rising with Saturn on their rising sign is going to be a lot different than a Leo rising with nothing on their rising
sign.
Wait,
so you mean in the house, Saturn in the first house?
In the first house, okay. Yeah. So those kind of things make a big difference because that's like you have that Leo in you, but you're shy, you know, or you're hesitant or you're holding yourself back. And each of the planets operate differently in each of the signs. The other thing I want to offer is that, you know, we're all the signs. So this is one of the other big problems with Western astrology and how it's practiced. People get really attached to their sun sign or whatever they associate with. They don't necessarily understand that actually we're a mandala. All of the signs are in you. Some of them have more planets than others. So you obviously have more of that energy. But the planets, I mean, the signs are really more of the feeling and the environment that we're in. The houses, what they rule, and where they're activating in your chart and what's going on in the sky right now and how that relates to you is going to show so much more than just knowing your sign and attaching to that.
So this is also good. The first house is what you, right?
It's
and
you.
The sixth house is the other.
No, the seventh house is the
other. The seventh
house,
excuse me.
Sixth house is the hard work.
It's the other side.
Yeah.
So if you go from zero or six or one to seven, right? It's the opposite.
Yes.
And then two is home.
Four is home.
Four is home.
Two is money.
Two is money. And what's three?
Three is your will, your willingness to learn new things, your capacity for competition, to drive yourself. So people who, push themselves maybe physically or push themselves in learning new skills, like you probably have a strong third house just based on what little I know from your fitness and your willingness to learn all this technology.
I have a lot of willpower. You
know? Yeah, a lot of willpower, a lot of ego. Also, though, that's the part of us that doesn't recognize that spirit moves through us and that we're not actually the doer. It's the part of us that's attached to the win at the end of our efforts.
Yeah, I don't have an ego, so it's not...
Okay, yeah, no, none of us do. Me
so
neither.
Fourth is home. Five is...
Fifth is your children and your creative energy. It's your past life credit. So it's like where you're bringing in. Did you bring it in good things?
Yeah.
it's your passions. So for people who don't have kids, you know, or even those of us who do, it's what you love like a child, your project, your passion, maybe creative sovereignty is, you know, that for you in many ways, your students, if you're a teacher.
So then sixth is house. Sorry, excuse me. Seventh is house. What is sixth?
Sixth is hard work.
Sixth is hard work.
Six sucks. No, I'm just kidding. It's hard work, health problems. It's Virgo is the natural sixth house. So it's health issues, it's debts, it's inimical energy with people. And it's also the ability to heal those things. So people with strong sixth houses often go into some kind of healing practice. They have an innate understanding of their fragility of health. And so they try to combat that by taking care of their health. So the sixth house, it will really depend on what sign it is. Once you understand the sign that is that house for you, then you have the feeling of that area of your life. So if the sixth house was Virgo, then yes, it would have a lot to do with, you know, the earth element of healing and plants and things like that. But if the sixth house is Scorpio, for you, the hard work is emotional labor, dealing with the shadows, looking at the dark stuff. That's hard for you.
Okay. Seventh is house.
Seventh is relationships.
Seventh is relationships. Wait, I thought we said home.
No, fourth is home.
Fourth is, oh my gosh, I'm all over the place. And then eighth.
Eighth is the fun one. It's the Scorpio is the natural eighth house. So eighth house is transformation. It's the house of death. It's called the cavity, the flaw in Vedic astrology in the translation. And it really indicates the places where we have to face our deepest fears and transform. And our deepest fear in many ways is our lack of control.
Ninth?
Is higher learning, wisdom, counseling, teaching, teachers, truth.
And 10th?
Career.
11th?
Community and highest worldly ambitions.
Is there 12?
Yes. 12th is where we check out, escape, hang out. No, death is more the 8th house. Oh. The 12th house is moksha. It's freedom. It's everything from like a heroin addict on the street with a needle in their arm to a sadhu who can consciously step out of their body and everything in between.
So
from
like
addiction and checking out and being like totally not present with the details in your life to maybe being a yogi and spending time in nature and not being around a lot of people to... to, you know, really actively seeking freedom, the true freedom.
The, like, maybe the tendencies you have towards perceiving freedom for yourself?
Yes, but Pisces is the natural 12th house. So one of the things you see with 12th house people, like if someone's ruling planets in the 12th, I can guarantee they've had addictions in their life. It's a guarantee. There's literally no question. And what sign it is will show me what kind of addictions they are. Did they have eating disorder? Were they an alcoholic? Are they addicted to media?
How do you know the ruling planet?
The ruling planet is based on your rising sign. So you need to know the time of birth. If you know your rising sign,
and it's
you know,
the planets in your first house?
It's the planet that rules your first house. So each of the signs are ruled by a planet.
Okay.
And we don't use the outer planets in Vedic astrology. We use, because the ancient seers used what they could see visibly with their own eyes.
And Pluto's not a planet.
You can use those. You can use those. And for world events, it's nice to use them. But in your personal chart, we go back to that thing where it's so far from you. The rising signs, the minute you're born, Pluto is everybody born within a huge chunk of time. So it's not as personal to you.
Let's talk about those outer planets. That was the next step on my journey. I think we've covered the houses. The last thing about the houses is it's a wheel, just like the zodiac. That really helped me understand, because you see how it's interesting creating like 2D mock-ups of the cosmos, right?
Separating it in these 30-degree segments is super key.
Yeah.
And the boxes that we use, they're in a sort of shape like a circle, but it's a box. And it's really easy to look at and see. Like, it's not difficult, and that's what I really appreciated.
One thing you mentioned that I want to touch on is when my son was born. I'm like, we were in Argentina the first week of the lockdown, so we're like alone in the hotel room. And I'm just like checking the time. I'm like, what's the rising sign going to be? You know, and what's the moon sign? We were there 12 hours. So it was a wild ride of like, what's the moon sign going to be? And he ended up being a Taurus moon. He ended up being an Aries. That was the easy part. We knew that. But the moon kept changing. He was Taurus moon and then Gemini rising. But literally on the Western perspective, on the cusp of being a Cancer rising. And I was like, oh, like I want him to be a Cancer rising. He'd be so sweet. But it turns out Taurus moon, and obviously whatever else in this chart, it's like when you're on the cusp. This is why I think the Vedic system makes more sense. Like you're saying, those 30 degrees, as opposed to just like cut and dry, here's the next set of qualities. Because, and maybe I'm not explaining that the right way, but he has all the qualities of the two sides of the rising sign. And it's because of the other things in his chart.
Right. And because one of the coolest things about Vedic astrology is that it didn't begin with just this 12 house system or these 12 signs. It started with nakshatras. And there are 27 nakshatras. And they're the stars behind the signs. And these nakshatras flank the signs. So there's a nakshatra that goes from Aries to Taurus called Kritika. And it's the Pleiades. And it's literally that place. So you're traveling on that star and you're going to have those Kritika qualities, whether you're in the Aries sign or the Taurus sign. It's going to be more fiery on the Aries sign. It's going to be more grounded on the Taurus side. And then there's one in the middle of each of the signs that's just for that sign. That really kind of embodies that sign more than anything else. But the water and fire ones have a break between them. They don't have a star that flanks them. They have what we call a knot, a karmic knot.
Interesting. So that's represented in the skies.
And it's once you get into the stories and the all the qualities of the nakshatras, people are like, whoa.
There's mythologies.
That's me. Yeah.
There's whole mythologies based on these,
whole mythologies that have been written out on these things. And they're very, very powerful for people to understand when they're trying to understand themselves.
And how many years old are these stories?
Oh, thousands. I mean, some of them date back 5,000 years or more. Yeah. You know, these are the oldest books we have on Earth.
This is the real shit.
Yeah.
I mean, people like laugh away astrology and I understand why.
Totally.
Like, oh, woo woo, it's bullshit, whatever. And a lot of it is.
A lot of it is.
But this is the real shit.
This is the real deal.
Yeah.
And when I do readings for people, they're pretty blown away by how much I do recorded readings because I'm a parent. I have a cheaper price for people to just order a recorded reading. Oh. And so sometimes I'm doing a reading for someone I literally know nothing about. They've sent me their birth information. Maybe a question, maybe not even a question.
And you just read it.
And I read it. And I mean, what comes back to me is like, holy S-H-I-T. Like, yeah. Like, I can't believe that you know that much about me without having ever even met me or know anything at all.
And it's not generalized and ambiguous, kind of like reading a Sunday horoscope. Like today, you
this might, could be true of anyone.
You might feel like an introvert, but you also might want to go see your friends.
Right. No, this is like you're having financial struggles right now with a relative and...
Oh, maybe I need you to read
they're doing chat. This. You know, it's very specific what's going on in people's world. Yeah, it's very specific.
It's an interesting tool. Me personally, I mean, like, it's fascinating and it makes me think, wow, that would be cool to get a reading. But at the same time, I already know what's going on for me.
Right.
You know, like,
so why would people need that? Is like, if you're in touch with yourself and you know what's going on, why would you need something like that? Well, I think for me, it does two things. Like, I get a lot of feedback that it provides validation for people. Like, they already know, like, they're like, oh, I feel an impulse to do this, but there's still some questions. It gives valuable feedback to them on that. And it also gives like precise dates and timing. And that's one of the things that's so special about Vedic astrology is it's so much about timing. So you have a better chance of being like, if I just waited, like for me, even just, you know, if I were to send out a podcast or it's like, if I wait an hour, I'm going to get that much more response than if I do it right now.
That's crazy.
Like, why wouldn't I wait an hour? And I taught yoga for 10 years and I had a set time, right? I couldn't like change my class every week based on the astrology. It's like my class is Saturday at 8:15. That's what time it starts. Sometimes that's a great time. Sometimes you look up the timing and it's like,
yeah, but that's also life, right? Sometimes you got to just deal with inopportune timing.
And absolutely. But what it gave me a chance to do was to see. It gave me a chance to research it and to see the difference in my class each week after week, and look at it and really see what a difference it makes. Yeah. And I have that with my work. You know, I'm a mom. I am very busy. I don't have time to sit at home and wait till that perfect moment, right? But there's always a time that's better than worse. If waiting an hour is going to make the difference, and now you can, you know, schedule posts to go at whatever time and things like that. So
I might need, and that's personalized.
Why not do that?
For your chart,
personalized
the
for
reception
your...
of your stuff?
That kind of thing, Muhurta timing is what it's called. That's actually more based on...
What is it called?
The general. It's called Muhurta timing.
Muhurta.
M-U-H-U-R-T-H-A.
Okay.
Muhurta. And it's based more on like your location. So like you and I would have the same Muhurta for something that we're going to do because we're both right here.
Give me some notes.
on what the good timings are?
Yeah, well, I that's something I kind of believe in. I think there's a few variables. Mm-hmm. One is like, well... My people, I don't want to call it my audience, but the people I interact with on Twitter, for example, my potential clients, all over the world. And so a lot of times it's a question of what time zone, not even what time zone, what time for me
is best
corresponds with where when they're posting. And so I wake up at 6:30 and I have to go right on to Twitter because that's already an hour, like it ends by 7:30 or 8. No one's on Twitter anymore because that's when people start their day.
Okay.
In the, you know, the real world.
In the real world.
Not in Hawaii, right? So like even when we do our jam at 9 in the morning here, that's 3 p.m. in New York or in Florida where he's at. So it's like, you know, I notice if I'll schedule something at 4 in the morning, so it'll be there when everyone gets on Twitter. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. That could also, the other variable is the content itself. Maybe it just sucks.
There's lots of variables. There's lots of variables. But that's why I liked the yoga class because it wasn't about my class, right? It was the people had to decide to show up before they found out if it was one of my better classes or not, right? it wasn't like, oh, this content's great. I want to read it. But I think there's still those variables that you're talking about, like the time of day for different locations and stuff being just not opportune. Like if I have the best time is 3 a.m, I'm not sending something out at 3 a.m. Because that just doesn't make sense. Yeah.
You schedule it.
Well, actually in Hawaii, it might make sense
because
it's 6 a.m. in California.
I do 4 a.m. Yeah.
Okay. So, but you know what I mean? Like basing on, I put more on the Muhurta timing than I do on that. Like I would send something out at 10 p.m. Hawaii time if it was a good timing because I'm awake, I can do it. And that's, it mitigates so much.
How much of intuition do you think plays a part in this? Because like I was telling you about my newsletter earlier, I started it up again after 2 years. And I just said, what's Jordan up to? and hardly anyone opened it. And I thought I sent it at a good time, but I was like, oh, maybe I sent it at a wrong time. And then the next few I sent at different times just to see, but they all had a 50% at least open rate, which is good.
Great.
And they all had something about being a creator in the title, which was weird at the time. Like, why, you know, what? All these people are on my mailing list to, for me. Yet when I mentioned being a creator, more people open it. And so I realized it wasn't about the time I sent it. It was about the content. And so then I kept messing around with the time. And now I'll just do it as long as it feels right. And if I'm not feeling right, like it's not ready yet, I don't force it out.
Absolutely.
I send it when it feels ready. Totally. And so I wonder how much of that intuition, how much of that satisfaction, self sense of accomplishment as like an artist, as a creator, relates to what's happening in the stars.
And you can kind of look it up and see, because I think that it's important to not spend your life attached to like, when's the right time to do this thing? You know, I think that it could become debilitating if it was an obsession to do that. I think it's more for me about like, I absolutely, you have to wait till you're done, right? You can't push it to get to a certain time. I've done that before and it's failed me. It gets a good response, but then I don't have the follow through because I wasn't ready. So having yourself in your own sovereign place where you feel good about what you're doing is going to have to be key. But from that point, if I can look up and say, hey, you know, just waiting a little bit is going to make a difference, or do it right now and it'll be better than waiting in 15 minutes, it gives me a push.
I think sovereignty is a good thing to bring up right now, because it's easy to displace our agency, our own responsibility. Oh, well, the stars are in charge, or like, it's not up to me.
Absolutely not.
When really this is a tool to help us enhance how we're already going about doing things. We still have free will.
We have 100% free will. And it's one of the things that really challenges me when I read Western astrology things, or when I talk to people who are dealing in that world, because they do seem to be stuck in a pattern of, well, I'm a Scorpio. Yeah. Well, I'm a Leo. Well, this is how I am. And
Mercury's
I'm like,
retrograde again.
First of all, you're probably not even that thing. And so the reason you're having the problem you're having is actually different than what you understand. Like, Scorpio is a good example. People are obsessed with being Scorpios when they're Scorpios. They think they're all dark and stormy, but half the time their sun's actually in Libra, and a sun in Libra is debilitated. And the reason it's debilitated is because you're giving away your power. And so the fact that somebody wouldn't understand that, like, that's a big difference to understand. You're not just a shadowy, dark, stormy person, but you give away your power to other people, and you don't actually have a good direct source from God. What you get is, what does everyone else want from me? What is everyone else needing? And that creates problems and fears and shadows and all the things that come up in the world of Scorpio.
That is really interesting, just because I feel like Libra and Scorpio couldn't be. Is there a karmic block between air and water like that?
They're very different. Air is the mind, and so water is the emotions.
Well, you mentioned earlier, like, the stars don't continue in the cycle between, did you say water and earth?
No, it's water and fire.
Water and fire. Is that the only one?
All the water and fire signs between Cancer and Leo.
Well, that's also
Leo.
The end of each cycle.
It's the end.
It ends with water.
It ends with it, and it's like, boom, what'd you learn? You better know for the next cycle, because you're jumping in without a lifeboat.
Yeah. What are those cycles called? There's three.
Well, I think they're phrased a little bit differently. Like, we look at it as the first section, the first four houses.
Of the cycle.
Are, like, of the self. So starting with your rising sign, but in the natural sky, it would start with Aries. So for you personally, it would be based on your rising sign, but in the natural sky, Aries through Cancer is section one, self. Leo through Scorpio, others. Sagittarius through Pisces, universal.
I find that those three sections of the cycle are 100% in alignment with my business projects for the year, or my personal fitness projects, my health, or I don't know, maybe I don't put as much conscious energy into the relationship stuff or family stuff, but I'm sure it's that too. And like, those first 4 months are very fiery. Like, it starts with Aries and it continues like there's all this energy to like start and like going through all the fundamentals to then launch into it in that second section. And then like the Leo is like, I'm all about it. You know, I'm embodying it with that fire. And then when we get back into Earth, I'm like, let's go, go, go. Let's do it. And then I get a little emotional about it when we get into water by the end. Oh, excuse me, skipping air. But the air gets more in the head and I get more intellectual and I see things that I could only have seen if I did the work during the Earth sign. Like by doing all that work from the motivation. Like it's the the fire motivation, the earthly work, and then the air, like, oh, wow, the lucidity that comes. Yeah. And then the emotional processing of it all. And I'll find myself, I got to be like, stay away from the alcohol during the water months because it can just get too much. And it can be a lot anyway. And so then that third section comes in and it's like this harvest and reap all the rewards of all the work I've been doing. It's, the work still continues, but like everything starts to come to fruition. And we're about to start it. Like we're getting closer to it as soon as Scorpio is done, right?
Well, right now we're sort of in the meat of the relational time, if you look at it the way that you're kind of talking about it. We the sun just entered Virgo actually yesterday.
Oh, we're still only in Virgo. All right. Well, I'm already feeling that third section so strongly.
But for you, it might be there. Like it, that might be that part for you. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe. Yeah.
Like so, for each of us, it's really different. And the signs, the water, earth, air and fire, each have a different motivation. Well, more than just the through the element. They have their own quality through the element, but also through the placement. Like the first house is a Dharma house. It's moving you towards truth. The second house is an Artha house. It's moving you through wealth or towards wealth and material possessions.
And how long does each house last?
The third, hang on one second. The third is a desire. It's kama. What do you desire? And that's your drive and motivation. And the fourth is moksha. It's freedom. So when you say that the water signs are the end of a cycle, it is. It's sort of coming to the part where you're freeing yourself from that cycle of first I have truth as my guide. Then I'm like, but wait, I need stuff. But then I have a desire to make something. And then I'm like, oh, wait, my desire is actually just causing me more more karma, more stuck in the cycle.
That's fascinating. The next Creator Sovereignty cohort is beginning in the middle of October around the new moon. I like to start these projects on the new moon because it is a magical time where we feel inspiration. It's a good time to start new projects that we want to commit to see if they're for us. Maybe they're not always for us. Maybe they are, but giving yourself a good 4 weeks with the moon is a great way to see if something is for you. The Creator Sovereignty Cohort is a group coaching experience where you learn how to develop a creator brand, find your value, discover your message, learn to make content that engages audiences, and start making money online. In many people's experience, including my own, you need to give yourself about 6 months of runway to really invest in yourself this way. But in my opinion, it is one of the strongest avenues towards developing sovereignty in and over your life. Once you've achieved creator sovereignty, you are free to live, to create, to travel, to be. It is a really wonderful feeling to live in that spot where you know you can create whatever you want. It is a type of sovereignty I don't think is discussed often enough. Something I'm going to be bringing up on this show more. So if that sounds like something you've been trying to do and you haven't been able to get started in the right way, I invite you to join us, creatorsovereignty.com. It is a great experience. It's a small group container. We all get to know each other. We all create content. There's also a daily video jam in the Creator Sovereignty Discord community, which you can join for free and be a part of also, creatorsovereignty.com.
And you let it go, and then you start again.
Yeah, right, right. And you feel it. I always feel it emotionally. And I relate all this to the moon. So to answer my own question, it's about a moon, each house, right?
Oh, like a moon's fate.
Yeah, you separate it into 12 parts, right?
So right. Like, if it was more authentic, like the way the Hindu calendar works and the Hawaiian calendar and many other cultures, it's based on moon cycles. So instead of it being January, it's based on the new moon to the full moon to the new moon and new month starts. Moon month.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah.
That's how I roll.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not on Google Calendar, but...
We live in this world, but
yeah. Yeah, but I mean, And it used to be something it was conscious about. Like I would, you know, sit down, have a new moon ceremony, write down my goals and intentions. Mm. Now it just happens naturally. Mm. It flows.
You feel it.
And I know, like, if I haven't been paying attention, oh, wow, it's the new moon already. Right. I can feel it. There's like 3 days where it's like, boom. And leading into that 3 days, I feel the moksha. Mm. I feel the death. I feel the, like, am I doing this right? I feel all the feels of just the human experience of like growing, and I sometimes it's really tough.
Yeah,
yeah. Sometimes I want to give up.
May I add something to that?
Yeah,
yeah. We live in Hawaii, right? We live on the Big Island, so we're super blessed to be around nature and have like actually know the moon from the light. Like I have to think about if it's a new moon or a full moon if I'm walking out to my gate to lock it because of how much light there'll be. Uh-huh. But people not here, many of the people have street lights and all this other stuff, and they're really disconnected from nature. So we naturally have a little bit more of a capacity to tune in on our own, just living in this kind of environment that we're in and the type of community we're in. But a lot of people, even in this community, don't realize how much they've been offset in what their beliefs are. We often have so much confirmation bias from how we were raised and what values were imposed upon us at a young time that we don't really have a very good barometer for what truth is and what's not truth. And so one of the things that makes me sovereign, that gives me sovereignty, is having looked at those patterns and looked at the things that are actually more like traumas or triggers or confirmation biases than they are truth. And when people are lost, they'll take truth wherever it fits into what they already believe to be. Mm. And so I think that the way the Western system works with the Gregorian calendar, with streetlights everywhere, with people not understanding that the solstice is here and Christmas was made, you know, X amount of days after the solstice, without understanding these things, they're off. And everything's a little off. So it's fine. Everyone should be sovereign to believe and do whatever they want to do. But what I really feel passionate about is helping people see the way they're just a little off. And if they could get back in tune, then everything would actually make more sense. It would flow even more. You know, we all naturally have some kind of, we've been here before, right? We're not first timers. So right. We have a lot of wisdom flowing through us naturally, and we're gonna make choices based on that intuition. But sometimes it's not intuition, right? Sometimes it's old trauma. Sometimes it's patterns of beliefs that we were given that we don't even realize we're still holding on to. So I really see that as the biggest problem in the Western New Age society of people who are trying so hard to understand themselves, but they're constantly following mistruths or things that are just slightly off.
Right.
Like even the music, you know, the whole thing with hertz and music and the 432 hertz or whatever, you know, it's like those kind of things. If there's enough of them in our society where we've just all been put a little off and so we're not in alignment, and yet we think we are. So
I was talking, this is a kind of a tangent, I want to come back to this. Remind me if I forget, but coming back to the moon thing.
Yes.
Just a little off. In fact, maybe this is too much of a tangent, but back in the, when was LSD first synthesized? The 40s? 50s?
I don't know the date, yeah.
It was a while ago.
Yeah.
It could have been the Ritalin and the Adderall of society. It was on, that was kind of where it was, I don't want to speak for the intentions of Albert Hoffman or whatever, but like, there was energy going in that direction. Mm. And instead, the hippies adopted it. It was part of the whole war on you know, the anti-war people. LSD's bad. War on drugs starts, you know. Right. And drugs win. 2023, drugs still win.
Drugs will always win.
Drugs won that one. But a little bit off.
Yeah.
Little bit off. You know, around the same time as the drug war, we got off the gold standard and our money became paper. Little bit off.
A lot off.
And 50 years later, we're seeing what's happening now. The dollar is paper. It's getting worse and worse. You know, you laugh.
Now they even want to get rid of the paper.
What's that?
I said, now they even want to get rid of the paper and just make it.
Yeah, well, no. The whole currency itself is paper. It's literally worthless. Like, it will be. It's our shared agreement. that it has value. But this is, you laughed when we were talking about Bitcoin earlier, but that is the solution that Bitcoin offers, is it's not paper. It's backed by work. It's backed by physics. You can't change it. You can't make more. So anyway, just a little bit off, And I think our, fortunately, our consciousness is moving in that direction where we're realizing that we're a little bit off.
Right.
So this is a really cool service you offer.
Yeah, thank you.
And to go back to the moon thing, a kind of a framework I've been developing for a long time that I'm now finally putting somewhere into the Creator Sovereignty Program for, I guess, beginners or people that want to start creating seriously, is the moon. Follow the moon. So like that new moon is a great time. You're going to feel inspired. You won't be, and if you think about it, reflect, everyone knows they feel inspired sometimes. How many people recognize it's on the new moon when that's really happening? And then how many people are recognizing that everything they've been working, they have all this energy to work the next week after a week after the new moon, all this serotonin starts flooding and they have, we have so much energy to do and to work. And then suddenly the full moon comes around and it switches to dopamine, flooding our neuromodulators, and we are in the flow, whatever, it's all good. We're satisfied, we're chilling, we're in flow, where it's like, it's all good. And then I think the last one is acetylcholine. We shift into acetylcholine, and this is all the moon's gravitational pull affecting us, water.
You want to hear what the word for the planets are in Sanskrit? Graha, and it means to grab. And it's literally the gravitational pull of the planets on us that creates this.
Graha.
Graha.
That's interesting. So that's part of the same Indo-European roots.
Huh? They're literally grabbing you. Sanskrit is...
Yeah, it is.
It has those roots.
Yeah, like how do you say foot?
It's pada.
Yeah. Like PA.
Oh, like Spanish is PA.
Or Latin. I just mean all the Latin languages. It's something like that.
PA. Pada is the foot. Yeah. So it's an interesting... Yeah, I really appreciate that understanding you have.
Yeah.
That it is literally, it's a physical, actual experience that's happening. Like when I see geological events happening in the charts, like it's not like the fires in Maui happened on that Kritika Nakshatra.
The Lion's Gate.
Well, they call it the Lion's Gate, but it's not the Lion's Gate. That's also bogus. You know, that's one of those things that people get caught on, and they're chasing something down, and then everyone picks up on it because they're like, "Oh, this will help me sell my, you know, whatever."
Yeah.
But they don't even know what they're talking about, right? And that's the problem. And most people have no idea what they're talking about. But
that's cool because they're selling.
But that day was Kritika, and it's ruled by Agni, fire. It's literally, and it means to cut off, and the people were cut off and fire, and. When the lava flow happened here in 2018, it was the day Mars and K2 joined in Capricorn. K2's underground, fire underground that we're not paying attention to. Oh yeah, we're living on an active freaking volcano, but what a shock. There's actually a flow. And then Mars moves in and breaks it up. And Capricorn's the earth. It's literally the earth. And cracks start coming up and the lava started flowing. That day, the lava started flowing.
That's crazy.
On the 3rd of May in 2018, it was like, whoosh. And so this, and I saw when it ended. I knew when it was going to end because it was the same thing. So
and it did?
And it did.
Wow.
It was over by the time Mars moved out of Capricorn is when it stopped flowing actively.
This is a good opportunity to start zooming out.
Okay,
so let's talk about the planets.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to start with my understanding and you can enhance it.
Okay.
Here's Earth. It's our substrate for being carbon, you know, air, all these things. it's not really in our... Is the Earth something that we really recognize in astrology?
Yeah, we're sitting on it.
Yeah, but
The Earth is you. Like the part...
You.
What everything we're seeing... is based on us being here on Earth.
On the Earth, at this one part of the Earth.
In the Vedic astrology.
Okay, there we go.
Western, it's not, but yeah.
Then there's the moon. Mm-hmm. It's the closest to home. It's like our emotional, it's that divine feminine kind of, well, I guess like that's how...
It's our intuition. It's our psyche. It's our mind and emotions. And it's also the part of us that travels from life to life. So it's carrying with us all of this, all of us, all of the part of us that's separate from the whole is in our moon.
There's the moon, and then what's next? Mars.
And the rising sign is the star that's rising on the eastern horizon when you're born.
Yeah,
just to point that in there.
Right.
We could go to Mars. It's your action It's your passion. It's your ability to do something disciplined, like getting up every day at 9 a.m. and recording your creator sovereignty jams.
And Mars is the god of war.
Mars is the god of war. So when we're aligned and driven with Mars, like Mars is exalted in Capricorn, where we have a purpose, an end game, and some containment for the fire. When Mars is in signs where it doesn't operate as well, like it's debilitated in Cancer, we don't know how to channel that fire. And so we end up being passive aggressive, emotional, fighting, arguing. In the fire signs, it might be more like a warrior. It might be more like someone who has a purpose, but the purpose is still fighting. Mm-hmm.
So then we got Venus, okay, which is more like love and relationships.
Love, relationships, and your sense of happiness. Mm-hmm. That's an important thing to understand about Venus. It's not just your relationships, but it's your capacity to be happy.
Is next Saturn or Mercury?
I mean, I would have done it in a slightly different order, but let's go with Mercury. Whatever. No, just, but yeah. We can go with Mercury, yeah.
Okay, Mercury's communication.
Communication. And the reason, I won't get into that. That's a bit too complicated, but we'll just stick with Mercury right now. Yeah. It's communication. It's your buddy. It's your intellect. It's your discernment, your capacity to objectively take in information, find where it fits, and objectively process that as fact or fiction without higher wisdom, just using your basic mind and discernment. Mm-hmm. And it's the part of us that is supposed to be objective. And depending on where Mercury is in your chart, you might not be very good at that. You might not be very objective. You might be very emotional about everything you say and think, or you might be very fiery about what you say and think.
So what would be Mercury? What would be a very objective Mercury placement?
The air signs. Mercury in the air signs is the most capable of being flexible with the thought and
Sun
not
air
being driven.
Signs?
No, when Mercury itself is in an air sign. When Mercury's in Gemini, its own sign, or Libra, or Aquarius, there's a flexibility. Okay. And it also does really well in the earth signs. It does well in its own earth sign of Virgo, but it also does well in Capricorn and Taurus because you're more grounded. You're not as, with the water signs, the problem is you're more attached to how it feels and if you're connecting and if you're not connecting. And then it becomes like this sort of dramatic turmoil of a conversation sometimes when there's a lot of emotions flowing. And with the fire signs, there's a tendency to be overbearing with Mercury. Mercury's in Leo, and everyone wants to be an expert, and everyone wants to share, and everyone wants to talk. We just got out of retrograde, so people were kind of clamming up, even though we're having issues getting their message out. But now that he's direct in Leo, we'll see more and more people being like, in your relationship is a great place to notice it. Everybody wanting to be the one in charge, and using their words in that way, as though I have power and authority in my words.
Okay. And so, once again, all the planets have mythological gods attached to these concepts.
They do.
And we see them in Western mythology, Eastern mythology, all over
all
the place.
Of them. There's always a...
And they're all kind of the same. They're all kind of the same, right? Like, they all mean
they
these same concepts
similar.
In each culture from thousands of years ago. I've just got the shivers thinking about that. Mm-hmm. So this is ancient knowledge that comes from somewhere.
Yes.
I mean, even the Bible isn't that old, right? And lots of people believe in aspects of the Bible, and it is great metaphors. There's great stories in that. It can be really important for understanding our culture. But this is thousands of years older than that.
And it's and even in the Vedic world, they had to start making more like stories. As time progressed, we see the Vedas were there one way, and then as time progressed, they moved into the Puranic tales, where they're much more story-ish and appealing to people's attention spans and capacity to process this stuff. They literally saw we were moving into a darker time, and were like, writing it down is actually not that great. Writing this down is changing it in a way because it's living, breathing information. It's not meant to be just like concretized in this tome.
Wow.
But if we don't do this, it'll be lost. Mm. And in all the other cultures that were also practicing things like this, they didn't write it down. Well, they didn't write it down, and
not
it's lost.
Oh.
Well, in the Western culture, all wisdom was basically like burned to the ground and buried.
Well, hold that thought.
Yeah.
I want to get to these outer planets, because that's where like ancient, Babylon, Sumeria, I think it is, comes in. Doesn't matter. An ancient Western-ish culture. Saturn.
Okay, Saturn's time. And if we look at it from the perspective of time, it's the pressure we feel from not enough time. It's the awareness that we only have a limited time on Earth, death. It's the awareness of old age. It's the awareness of the cold, hard facts and truths of life, that you will die ultimately. But even before you die, you might be impoverished, you might be unhealthy, you might lose everyone you care about.
You have to deal with government and bureaucracy. That's how I always understood
the Saturn. Sun is really about government, and Saturn and the bureaucracy sun. Would have more to do with a relationship between Mercury and Jupiter. But Saturn has to do with like the fear. It has to do with the fear we feel around things. And right now, Saturn is retrograde. So it has to do with our capacity to commit to something based on our fear, based on our awareness of time.
While it's retrograde?
And how we're spending... Well, right now, we're questioning what we've committed to. We're questioning what we have committed to and whether or not it's the right things for us. And if you're a different rising sign, it'll be a different area of your life. For me, it's based in my career. So running back over things that I've done in my career, questioning what's right, making new choices based on that, reviewing like, okay, what are the things I've done so far and are they working for me? And am I okay continuing to commit to the same things I've committed to? When it's your seventh house for a Leo person or a Cancer person, Saturn rules their seventh house. That's going to be like relationships. Commitment to relationships. Are they working? Are they not working? So it really depends on your rising sign for what area of your life it is. But for all of us, it's the same thing. It's about commitment.
Gotcha.
And our ability to humble ourselves enough to do something.
So I had always interpreted Saturn as like constraints and boundaries.
Yes. Okay, that too. Limits.
Yeah, and then when Saturn goes retrograde, they kind of disappear.
They just become confusing. You just become more unsure of where your boundaries are.
Okay.
But yes, that's thank you for saying that, because that's boundaries are hugely important for Saturn. Yeah.
And then that jumps into Jupiter.
Jupiter.
Abundance.
Yes, wealth and abundance is part of Jupiter, but it's also it's really coming more from our ability to expand, and our inspiration, our path towards truth.
Our path towards truth.
Wisdom.
Which is naturally expansions, I guess.
It should be. It
should
be. When Jupiter's in non-expansive places, like he was in 2020, well, 2021, he moved into Capricorn, and then he moved into Aquarius, and now he's in Pisces, we have more expansion now available to us in our belief system than we had before, even though he's a retrograde. Well, right now he's an Aries, sorry. Jupiter moves a little faster. But we have more capacity for expansion when he's in a place where there's courage, like Aries, or in Pisces, this is his own sign, where we're connected to Source. But when he's in Saturn signs, where there's more constriction, there's more fear, there's more like, no, the limitations on our expansion, we can't expand, or our beliefs become very fear-based. And so, yes, he's expansion. And he's also the place where we don't feel expansion when he's not operating in full intelligence. So where these planets are in your chart, it's like, that's the other problem with people being attached to signs, is they don't understand that every planet operates differently in a different sign.
Yeah.
So, you know, the sun has places where he's doing really well. He's exalted in Aries, right? That's the best place for the sun. Jupiter is good in Aries. We have motivation to act on our beliefs. We have courage. We have discipline. But we're also more selfish, and we don't have as much of a big picture.
So if I have Jupiter in Aries, I'm more selfish and I don't have much of a big picture?
Just in terms of the beliefs, but again, I would need to know what your rising sign was. I would need
Virgo.
I would need to see it in the Vedic.
You need to see the
I would need
thing.
To see the Veda calculation to rely on that.
Thing, right?
But it's like, then it would depend on where it is in your chart for you. For me, he's in my 12th house right now. He has to do with community and astrology and esoteric topics. So it doesn't affect me the same way as it would somebody who's a Sagittarius or Pisces rising, or someone who's a Gemini or Virgo rising.
Right.
Those people are going to have a much bigger relationship with Jupiter, because it's going to affect themselves and their structural places in their life, their relationships, their home, and their career.
Interesting. Okay, what's after Jupiter?
Well,
are we getting out there yet?
Saturn is actually the last one. So we kind of, and the reason the order of the planets is the way it is, we were moving into the outer planets, which I don't have as much authority to speak on, I would say. Like, I know them sort of more from my Western astrology beginnings.
That's what I want to talk about.
Before anyway. I moved into there. But you could share what you, but what I would like to say about the order of the planets is they each lead to the next thing. Yeah. So we understand them based, you know, there's the sun, which is our consciousness, there's the moon, which is our inner self, there's Mars, which is our action and our ability to act on the marching orders of the king. Then you move into your buddhi, your intellect, and your capacity to discern things. And you actually go to Jupiter before you go to Venus, because then you need to be able to attach yourself to something higher. It can't just be in the details. It can't just be in the facts and figures. You need to have some belief. You need to make a thesis or something. You need to draw a conclusion at some point. You can't just be a stream of information, right? You have to make it mean something. And then you move to Venus, because you can have all the great beliefs in the world, but you're just going to spiritually bypass yourself and everyone else if you can't carry that into your relationships. Mm-hmm. If you're just sitting there with all these lofty maxims that you have to share with people, but you can't actually have a healthy relationship with someone and you know, compromise and relate, then what's the point? So Venus is actually, in a way, almost higher than a higher threshold than Jupiter in terms of the gurus, the teachers. They're both the teachers. And then Saturn is, of course, the true test.
Yeah.
Sure, you can relate to someone, but can you face your own death and being on your knees and losing your hands and you know, everything you've ever had? Can you deal with loss? Can you deal with the fact that you have a limited amount of time? And can you learn to meditate so that you can move beyond time?
Wow. So that's the Vedic focus. Vedic astrology focus is right there.
Mm-hmm.
So then what I know of the other planets, which are what? Uranus, Neptune and Pluto.
Yeah.
These are more collective oriented. It's like Pluto has what, a 12-year orbit?
Mm-hmm.
So anyone born in that 12-year time, is it 12?
I think
12?
It's more than 12. I think it's more like 30.
I think it's 140 something.
It's not 140, but I think it is. I think it's closer to 30. I have to look. We could look it up.
Yeah, you could look it up real quick while I just say this. Yeah. But for example, I have Pluto in Scorpio.
Okay.
Do you as well?
I'm
pretty sure my brother. My brother's 7 years younger than me. And he has, I'm pretty sure, Sagittarius, which is after Scorpio. And what I've always lived with, and I know many of my peers around my age live with as well, is this intense...
Oh, how many years did you say?
12 or 148.
It's 248 years.
248.
248. So you're very right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a huge orbit. It takes a long time.
Yeah.
So you do. So I think you have a period of like, is it 12 years then? 12 times 12 is what? No, it's 140. Is it 24 years? No. Well, whatever. You get a large chunk of time where everyone born during this year, these years.
248.
No. Is Scorpio.
Right.
But then how you divide that by 12, right? And then you have how many years for each sign. So I'm going to really try hard to vocalize this well. The ancient cultures, I want to say
20 years. So 20 years. Yeah, I thought it was 30, but I wasn't sure if it was 20 or 30. That makes more sense.
So these ancient cultures, this is how I first heard astrology, like kind of started, was with the recognizing the rise and fall of monarchies, of kings, of queens, of sovereigns. Mm. And they would recognize it in those outer planets. Oh, wow. Every time Pluto comes here, 248 years, right?
But how did they see Pluto?
I don't know. Maybe it was Neptune or Uranus.
Well, that's the reason why we don't use it in Vedic astrology.
Because you can't see it?
Because you can't see those planets.
So everything I'm saying is bullshit.
No, it's not necessarily bullshit. I'm just saying that that's why we don't use it. It's not that they don't affect, because they do. But everything you need to know can be accessed with the information we have using up to Saturn.
So this, whatever story I heard, is these outer planets help you understand history.
Mm.
You start to see the patterns of history and civilization.
Absolutely.
So, for example, I wish I had this written down right now.
Pluto's in Capricorn right now.
Last time Pluto was around here was the American Revolution.
Right.
Or something like that. 250 years ago. Yeah, sounds about right. Yeah. And you have these cycles. Last time Pluto was in... Last time Uranus was in Taurus, which was recently, not lately, but I think it was in the last 10 or 20 years, was like the rise of Hitler in Nazi Germany. Like, you have these patterns in history that correlate to exactly when these outer planets are in these signs.
So this is really interesting to me, because as somebody who uses the sidereal system, I can tell you that, like, you know, Pluto is still in Capricorn. And I know there was a big hoopla sometime this year about how Pluto moved for the first time into I'm guessing Aquarius is what the game was. But that's not true. So it would be more potent for people to understand that actually, like, 2 years ago, he moved into Capricorn, and that was the big deal. So we don't even use the outer planets on such a high level, but that accuracy with those outer planets is even more important, because it takes so much time to get there that when you're off by 24 degrees, you're off. It's literally the wrong thing. So when you're looking at history like that, it would be like Aries for Uranus rather than
Whatever. But yeah, the point is we know that it's 248 years in an orbit. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what sign it's in.
Right.
These orbits, different sections of it, you can start to see the mirror. See how people are super... Society's kind of crazy right now, right? There's a lot of extremism going on. This has mirrors in other really intense parts of our history.
Yes.
And I don't mean... this doesn't even have to do with astrology. I just mean that this opened my eyes a lot when I saw, I followed this blog all that went into these outer planets and how they affect history and what you can expect and new world orders in 2028 and after, and these kind of, not meaning like a dystopic thing, it could be a utopic thing too. But the point is that you can actually track a lot of these orbits with big cycles happening on a civilization scale. So it's, I guess, the antithesis to Vedic astrology, because Vedic astrology is all about the self.
No, it's the opposite. Vedic astrology is less about the self than Western astrology.
I was thinking because everything is very...
It's both. They're both, I would say, on some level. But Vedic astrology's biggest blessing and the way it was used back in origination is... for timing these exact kind of things you're talking about, like for timing of ceremony, for timing of battle, for when the king should do this, you know, and kings would wait 15 years to get married until the time that was right.
I see.
So it was more about this using it for the external world than just sitting in this self sort of narcissistic place of like, who am I and what am I doing here? It was understanding yourself in the whole. And I think Western astrology is more obsessed with the self because it's attached to these signs and how I feel and things like that. But both can be used for what you're talking about and should be. It's not my personal emphasis in my practice. I tend to work more with individuals on helping them see themselves in the big picture. But I think there's a lot of really brilliant Vedic astrologers who do focus on that, and it's just more accurate. Like, that's what's so beautiful about it, is how accurate it is. But what you're saying about the outer planets, I appreciate that, because you're understanding things from the inside out, and I really appreciate that. Like, you're kind of feeling it in your own being and relating it to what you already know in the world.
And that's, I think, what I was trying to start off with, is I have Pluto in Scorpio, my brother has Pluto in Sagittarius, and what I've learned about that is my generation with Pluto in Scorpio, we're like, fuck the system, we need a revolution. And like, but the generation behind us, they're like living the realization, like, oh my God, we need a revolution. And then we're like, we're born into it, we need a revolution. And then the next generation, the Sagittarians, they're like, there's no question, we're, you can't control us. They don't even think about it, the millennials. Mm-hmm. Like, they're on. And yeah, sure, maybe they can still be manipulated by the powers that be or whatever, but they're like core there. And like you said, it's observing inside from the outside.
Right.
And that to me was another powerful indicator, because I've felt that since I learned how the world works at my last year of college. Like, oh man, like, this is my purpose here. And
yeah.
That shouldn't be undervalued your discovery of self.
No, it's purpose. You're bigger. Yeah, your purpose is everything. That's my primary. That's the thing I like to show people more than anything, is what they're. We have Sanatana Dharma in the Vedic sciences, all of them: yoga, Ayurveda, Vedic astrology, moving towards Sanatana Dharma, eternal truth. We're all doing that, and yours is the same as mine. But we each have our own Swadharma, our personal truth, our way to get there in this lifetime. And that is absolutely my biggest passion, besides showing people timing, is showing people what their path is and what they're always doing whether they're doing their career, whether they're doing their relationship, whatever they're doing, that's what they're doing. And it's beautiful when you realize it, because you're like, oh shit, that's what I've always been doing.
Yeah.
And now I can integrate that in what, in the choices I make, you know, I can honor that, as opposed to like living from some place of what I'm supposed to do based on other outside forces.
Mm.
'Cause it can fit into any, you know, any dynamic, really. It's not like that you have to do this one job in order to have that met. So and you know, the other thing I noticed is that we didn't actually talk about the nodes of the moon as two grahas. And those are really important, because when you were talking about fanaticism with beliefs, Rahu, the north node, is joined Jupiter right now in Aries. So we have this exaggeration and delusion around what we believe. And so, and it's in Aries, where we're already just, I don't even care if I'm right, right? I don't care who I knocked out in the process. I don't care if I'm right. This is what I believe,
I'm
and it's important.
It.
Yeah. And so that Rahu energy has been very powerful and strong for us. And it always is, because it's so obsessive. It's like a big open mouth. In the mythology, it's literally a mouth open, just devouring whatever it can in sight and not assimilating. And the south node of the moon is cut off from the north node. It's called Ketu. And it's the neck down to the tail of this serpentine-like creature, and it is all our old stuff, all our old knowledge, all the wisdom we came here with, everything that we know, yet we have no head to engage in this world. We're not interested, so we don't look at it. We look away from wherever K2 is in our chart.
That's amazing, because I always heard it much more simple. The south node is like the past life, where we're coming from. And the north node is where we're going towards
new karma
in this life, and like where we die.
But understanding that you're obsessed with the new karma and avoiding the old karma is an important quality of it, because there's a lot of delusion with the nodes. They're called chayagraha. They're shadow planets, right? They're not. They don't have that gravitational pull that the other planets have.
Shadow planets.
They have the connection to the sign they're in and the planets they're joined. And so they magnify wherever they are, but they don't have their own body. They're like a person who doesn't, who's not embodied and who just clings to whatever's around them, but then enhances it, not necessarily in a good way. And sometimes it can be powerful and mystical, and you can get messages from other realms, but rarely does it work in this realm to create smoothness in our career, our relationships, our, you know, it rarely gives us ease. It usually gives us insight that is coming from somewhere we're going to be or somewhere we once were. And when we, our goal with the nodes in the eclipses, because that's the only time they show up, is to bring those two together, to take your past life wisdom and inform your future karma.
During the eclipses?
Well, during the eclipses is when we see it the most, and when it pops. And those are the transits in the sky. You personally in your chart have your Rahu Ketu in an axis. They're always an axis. They're always across from each other. And you have them somewhere in your chart. And then in the sky, Rahu's in Aries, Ketu's in Libra right now. We all are dealing with that collective karma. So on the eclipses, we're dealing with the karma of the houses it's visiting. But when it's whenever transits hit your natal ones, or you're going through a Rahu Dasha or something like that, then that's going to pop up for you. And you're going to be forced to deal at some point with whatever you're avoiding in K2. It's going to force you to do that so that you can finish that karma. Because you can't open up the new karma if you haven't finished the old one. If you don't understand what your issues are with career, let's say if you have K2 in the 10th house, how are you ever going to find peace and be at home in yourself in the 4th house? You might be obsessed with finding peace in the 4th house, but if you can't take care of your outside responsibilities, you'll always have them jumping into your peace that you're trying to create. So you can be obsessed with trying to create peace and feel good and all those things, but you need to heal the old karma. And it works like that with all the house axes.
Radha, thank you for coming on and sharing so much wisdom. It's really nice to hear an expert in this subject. And maybe I'm just too deep down the rabbit hole, but like I hear you talk about this and like it just sounds so reasonable and it just makes so much sense to me. So I'm hoping people listening can start to, think maybe differently about this whole thing. How can people find you if they want to learn more?
Well, I have a website at radahomeastrology.com.
Okay.
And I have a Patreon group also, Radha Home Astrology, where I my group is called Cosmically Aligned. So my goal is to help people understand themselves within the cycles, because it's one thing to offer the new moon, full moon reports, and I do a weekly stars report, but I do in that special group, I break it down for each rising sign. So you could say, oh, this is what's happening for me this week, and recognize how different it is for somebody else, maybe your partner or maybe your, you know, your mom or whatever. So cool. I Cosmically Aligned is my new passion that I've started to really help people align themselves, like their own selves, not just with the sort of general horoscope, but with their own personal path. So yeah. And then I'm on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube as well.
Radha Home. Check her out, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
It was so
on.
Great to be here. Thanks, Jordan.
Thank you very much for listening. This podcast is available on all major apps. Please head over and follow there. And if you really like it, leaving a quick review and 5 stars is super helpful, especially on Apple Podcasts. SovereignStatesOfMind.com is a place you can put in your email to receive things to your inbox every week. These are updates. These are blog posts, anything related to this podcast and the theme of developing Sovereign States of Mind, sovereignstatesofmind.com. You can also support the show there by becoming a monthly patron. My name is Jordan Erbs. You can find me on Twitter as Jordan Erbs, JORDANURBS. And I look forward to interacting with you and hearing a bit about your journey. If you're interested in coming on this podcast, don't hesitate to be in touch. Much love. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Sovereign States of Mind.